Thank you. Good afternoon or good morning to those of you in the West. Welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Laura Feast and I will moderate today's seminar. Today's topic is the Tiger Discretionary Grants Program. Please be advised that today's seminar is being recorded. We'll have a presentation given by Tony First, the Director of the Federal Highway Administration Office of Freight Management and Operations, and in the room we also have Jacob Falk and Roger Bonhart, who will introduce themselves momentarily to answer questions. Tony, I'll let you introduce the two gentlemen sitting next to you.
All right. Thank you, Laura. As Laura said, I'm the Director of the Office of Freight Management and Operations of the Federal Highways. With me is Jake Falk.
Hi, this is Jake Falk. I'm the Acting Director of the Office of Infrastructure Finance and Innovation in the Secretary's Policy Office.
And good afternoon, everybody. I'm Roger Bonnert with the Maritime Administration. Our office is Intermodal System Development, and we work on port infrastructure and congestion mitigation.
Okay, I'd like to go over just a few logistical details before we start the seminar. We're going to have the first 30 minutes, Tony will be giving his presentation, and the final 60 minutes will be for question and answer. We are going to address the pre-seminar questions first, then address questions in the chat box, and then if we have time allowed, we will answer questions over the phone. So Tony, with that, I'll let you get started.
Thank you very much, Laura. So if you can go ahead and go to the first slide, now we'll get started. Good afternoon, and thank you all for attending this Talking Freight session. Happy to be able to provide this service, and I'm glad that I have both Jake and Roger here with me. For starters, the presentation, do not use this as a substitute for reading through the Federal Register notice. I strongly encourage you to make sure that you have read through it. There's an awful lot of good guidance that I'll be referring to throughout the course of the presentation. So please make sure that you spend a lot of time wading your way through the Federal Register Notice. Also be advised, there is the potential for the Federal Register Notice to be modified by a supplemental on June 17th. The decision on whether or not to produce one has still not yet been made by OST, but keep your eye on the website and make sure you pay attention to it, because there could be supplemental information for what you're going to hear today. Next slide. We'll go over each of these elements within the presentation, and then, as Laura has already indicated, we'll go ahead and deal with the questions that have already been submitted, then we'll go to the chat box, and finally we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines for anybody to go ahead and comment. Before we get started, there are some new ground rules that need to be adhered to, and we do have some federally registered lobbyists with us on the line, so no discussion of individual projects. We will keep all of our comments to policy issues or programmatic specifics. The Q's and A's from today's session will also be posted to the OST website in accordance with the guidance we receive regarding any time we have conversations where federally registered lobbyists are with us. And as with all Talking Freight sessions, as Laura's already indicated, the presentation and the dialogue will be posted to the Talking Freight website hopefully by next Friday, June 19th. Next slide. As we walk through all of this, significant impact, as you see up here, which is the criteria that we have been given, has been defined through the selection criteria in the Federal Register Notice. As all of you probably are aware, the Secretary may waive $20 million floor on the projects. If you have a project that seeks this waiver, make sure you state so in the proposal that you submit to the Department. Again, if you are anticipating seeking a waiver for the $20 million floor, make sure you state so in the proposal you submit. The programmatic elements noted in the fifth bullet will be applied after the project proposals have already been evaluated against the primary and secondary selection criteria that are identified within the Federal Register Notice. And funds are available for obligation until 9/30/2011. Next slide. Again, please be sure you read the Federal Register Notice in its entirety. The Department is now accepting applications. But again, no decisions on funding for projects will be made until after the September 15th deadline. So while we are accepting a lot of applications, currently the door is open for people who want to submit applications to us. No decisions regarding funding will be made until after the September 15th deadline has passed. The department is currently evaluating the comments that we have received to decide whether or not to issue a supplemental notice. Again, no decision has been made regarding whether or not a supplemental notice will be created and published, but make sure you stay tuned and monitor the website to see if one does come out. Next slide. Essentially, as you see here, the funds will be awarded to governmental entities, but public and private collaboration is most assuredly allowed and is encouraged. For multi-state or multi-jurisdictional applicants, picking a lead entity would help, particularly as a point of contact. The department expects the projects, when they are submitted, to be complete, but we may need to discuss project details with the applicant, so a point of contact is most assuredly necessary, and particularly for multi-state or multi-jurisdictional applicants, having an individual who is the lead or an entity which is the lead would be helpful. As you can see here from the language, the eligibility for the types of projects is extraordinarily broad. So I would encourage you to treat this as broadly as you can, as opposed to narrowly. The department's given us, actually Congress has given us a lot of latitude in the types of projects that we can look at and evaluate through this discretionary grant program, so the door is wide open. Next slide. These are the primary selection criteria. And it is on these and the economic stimulus criteria in the next slide that the department will place the greatest emphasis. Again, the department will be assessing the public benefits generated by the projects as measured against these outcomes. The economic competitiveness covers the long-term job piece. The short-term jobs are captured on the next slide, which is, if you can go ahead and go to the next slide. Again, this is where we're going to be capturing the short-term jobs, the jobs that are created as a result of the project itself. The economic competitiveness piece on the prior slide is where you evaluate the longer-term job creation as a result of the project itself.
Bye-bye.
While these are listed as secondary criteria, they are still criteria that will be weighed and evaluated by the evaluation teams. Pay attention to them. They are listed, again, like I said, as secondary selection criteria, but they are important criteria that the department will be taking into consideration and as it evaluates all the projects that are submitted to us. Next slide. Benefit cost analysis. As you can see here, the larger the request for funds, the more detailed the benefit cost analysis needs to be. There are no required BCA tools or methodologies that must be used, but as noted in the fourth bullet, identifying the methodological standards used are necessary for requests greater than or equal to $100 million. The data that is to be used and evidence of project benefits and merits need to be publicly available or verifiable. And again, as the last bullet indicates, the department is specifically seeking comments on these requirements, so if you have any input on things we need to consider, please make sure that you contact the department and let us know. Again, the website has the availability for you to communicate with us.
And to the extent the department does have further guidance on the benefit cost analysis, that will be included in the guidance provided by June 17th. So it will be worthwhile to monitor the Tiger Grants website and be sure to catch any guidance that is issued by that date.
Excellent. There is no specific application format or form. You can submit your application in whatever way you decide is the most appropriate. The narrative portion is no more than 25 pages. That's single-sided pages, not double-sided pages. Make sure you address all of the criteria within the application form that you submit to the department. The detail that you need to provide should be sufficient to clearly explain to the evaluation teams what the project entails and what challenges you are seeking to address. Geospatial information is, of course, very, very useful and helpful and would be appreciated. Again, publicly available or verifiable data needs to be provided to us, and to the extent that you have confidential business information that you want to have considered by the department, please make sure you identify it as such so that we can treat it accordingly. Next slide. The evaluation process. We do not yet know how many evaluation teams will be assembled. It will really be a function of the number of applications that the department receives. Our guess from all of the input we've received so far is this is going to be an all-hands-on-deck evolution for the department. And we will use the full range of departmental expertise and experience as we assemble the teams we use to evaluate the projects that were brought forward. We may very well also assemble specialty teams around particular issues, particularly around the financials and around the benefit cost analysis. because we do have expertise and capacity in that area, so we may have a number of teams who are specifically looking at and evaluating those elements of project proposals. Next slide. As with all the Economic Recovery Act programs, transparency and accountability are very much a part of this program. The website that you see at the top of the slides provides further guidance on the reporting requirements that are going to be part of this. And again, there is an entire section devoted to this in the Federal Register notice, and I would encourage you to take a look and read through this, particularly those of you who are not state DOTs. Most of the state DOTs are familiar with this from the type of funding that we're already putting out into the public domain. For those of you that are not familiar with this, it is worth your while to spend some time reading through what the reporting requirements are going to be for funds received through this program. As noted earlier, if you are requesting a waiver of the $20 million floor, please make sure you let us know in your grant proposal. If you are pursuing a TIFIA loan in conjunction with the application for a grant, you will have to follow TIFIA loan application guidelines in conjunction with those for this $1.5 billion program. So again, if you are going to be seeking a TIFIA loan in conjunction with this discretionary grant program funding, then you need to have a separate application for the TIFIA program in addition to the application for this program itself. The TIFIA subsidy costs will be counted against the state's total, not the TIFIA loan amount. That is a question we've had in the past. And also, the TIFIA subsidy cost is not subject to the $20 million bill. Next slide. This timeline is pretty straightforward. I would encourage you to put a 17 under that June column. There could be a supplemental notice that could come out by that time, and you need, like I said earlier, you'll need to monitor the website to determine whether or not that comes out. And again, no selections until all of the projects have been received September 15th. We will seek to announce selected projects as soon after September 15th as possible, and all grant awards from this solicitation must be made by February 17th, 2010. There are going to be FAQs for this program. The website that you see here is a place you can go to take a look at them. And again, like I said, because this webinar involves federally registered lobbyists, there will also be all of the Qs and As from this program posted to that website as well, in accordance with the guidance and the criteria that we've been given by Congress for how we're going to implement the Economic Recovery Act program. So, that kind of walks us through this. Again, as with all Talking Freight, this slide presentation will be available and on the Talking Freight website for those of you who want to go in and take a look at it. I encourage you to do so. And with that, I would imagine we can start working our way through the, unless swimming. Roger, Jake, if you have anything in addition you would like to add, by all means.
Sure, thanks, Tony. I would just point out that the framework for this program comes from the Recovery Act, and the Recovery Act has multiple goals. Obviously, an important goal of the Recovery Act is to provide quick job creation and preservation, and to create economic activity, and that's reflected as one of the primary selection criteria in this program. But the Recovery Act also has a purpose of investing in transportation and other infrastructure that provides long-term benefits for the country, and that's reflected in the other primary selection criteria, which really focuses on some of the long-term benefits that the department has identified as critical priorities. These include state of good repair for transportation infrastructure, the economic competitiveness of the United States, and livability and sustainability are very important priorities of the department. The secretary has been very clear that he's focusing on these as priorities. Livability really focuses on the quality of life for people who are living and working in specific communities, and sustainability has more of a global environmental sustainability focus. It's looking at had issues like reducing fuel consumption, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and it's to a certain extent, sustainability is a little more quantifiable than livability, which is a little bit more of a qualitative measure. But these are the overall primary selection criteria which we're looking at. Safety, of course, is also one of the priorities of the department and one of the key selection criteria that we've identified as a primary selection criteria as well. So this framework that we've set up traces back to the Recovery Act.
Well, this is Roger. Just one thing to call to your attention. In the criteria, there's a section that talks about program-specific criteria, and it's got four sections, one for bridge replacement, one for transit projects, one for TIFIA, and one for port infrastructure investment projects. And anybody contemplating the port infrastructure ones, please take a look at that specifically, because it's not a program that we've had in the past. It goes into a little bit more detail than some others on what we're looking for.
All right. Well, then with that, we'll go ahead and start working our way through the questions that we have received initially from your written input to us, and then we'll go ahead and get to the chat box. Our first question is, what level of detail is important in discussing the various elements and components of the application? And our response, as I indicated in the presentation, is be clear and distinct. What do you want to have funded? Sufficient detail that the individuals reviewing and evaluating the grant proposals can clearly understand what the project entails and the challenges it is meant to address. Is the timing of submittal of the application critical? Will applications submitted early and well in advance of September 15th be receiving favorable treatment? No, they will not. As long as the applications are received by September 15th, all of the applications will be reviewed after that date, and no decisions will be made until then. Is the state governor required to prepare a 1511 certification for all Tiger grants received by his or her state? The answer is yes. If you go to the Federal Register section 10, paragraph B, you will find all of the answers to your questions regarding what has to be submitted there. Will the department approve or deny each application is submitted, or may the department modify the terms and amount of funding for some projects? As I said in the presentation, we fully expect the projects as they are submitted to us to be complete so that we can evaluate them. However, if we need to get back with the individual applicants, we will do so, and we need to contact, of course, information on the application to take a look at that. Please describe the process for choosing which projects will receive Tiger funding. As I said earlier, the department will assemble evaluation teams, all of which will be schooled and counseled in exactly what the criteria will assemble and how they will be looking at it. I'm sure we'll have evaluation sheets that all of the different evaluation teams will be working on. And then exactly how the process works after the evaluation teams have taken a look at it, we still have to kind of work through all the details of that. I imagine there'll be another group, and then it'll be taken to the secretary, and the secretary will make his programmatic determinations from there. Does the administration have additional guidance to offer on best practices for determining benefit cost analysis, particularly as non-traditional benefits such as GHG reduction and land use aren't added? You want to talk to this one, Jake?
Yeah, I think this is an area that the department recognizes may not be as well developed as it could be, and there are a number of measures which we're looking for. We asked for people to provide comments on the benefit cost analysis, and some of the comments that have come in during the comment period are related to benefit cost analysis. To the extent the department provides additional guidance, it will be available by June 17th, and that would be in the supplemental Federal Register notice. So I would encourage you to monitor the website, look for the supplemental Federal Register notice, and that's where additional guidance about the best practices for doing the benefit cost analyses will be addressed.
Alrighty. How much of a priority will economically distressed areas receive over non-economically distressed areas for project selection? What I can tell you is it is part of the primary selection criteria. Exactly how much of a priority is going to be established for this has not been determined. but it is part of the selection criteria and will be fully reported on. The information on DOT's website with respect to economically distressed areas is at the county level, which may not reflect the economic status of a community within the county. Will the department consider evidence that a town or city is economically distressed, even though the county may not be? What documentation will need to be provided? This is something that the department has been brought to the department's attention, and we recognize it as an issue, and if we have any further guidance on this, I would imagine it would be in supplemental information that will be coming out. Are regional metropolitan planning organizations eligible to sponsor projects? Yes, eligible applicants include U.S. territories, tribal governments, transit agencies, port authorities, other political subdivisions, state or local governments, and multi-state or multi-jurisdictional applicants. There may be a need for MPOs to have a relationship with those people who actually own the transportation infrastructure, and that would have to be documented within their application. For freight rail transportation projects, does a state or local government need to be the grant recipient as opposed to the private railroad company? Government agencies are required to be the grant recipient. However, as I said in my presentation, eligible applicants may partner with private entities and use the grant funds to pay up for a broader partnership or for a private railroad project. What will the eligibility requirements be? Port-related freight, what percentage of traffic or non-traffic? Again, all of the eligibility requirements are fully stated within the Federal Register notice. The types of projects that are eligible are indicated, and as I said in my presentation, it is a rather broad field, so if you interpret the language broadly, should think about it. Roger, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I would just echo Tony's point that we're looking for a broad field of applications, so you should view these as non-restrictive as you can.
But do keep in mind the statutory language, which is capital investments in surface transportation.
Right. Right.
Are projects on principal arterials and or state routes eligible for grants? Surface transportation facilities generally include highways, ports, freight and transportation, railroads, and transit systems. Eligible projects are not limited to projects that receive federal assistance. Local projects that do not receive federal assistance are eligible to apply for funding under the program. Can the Tiger discretionary grant funds be used for construction and administrative costs or for construction costs only? Yes, Tiger discretionary grants can be used for administrative, engineering, or design work, but only to the extent that the grant funds are also being used for the construction of the project.
Yeah, and this is, again, it sort of goes back to the criteria, whereas using funds for design or construction may be an eligible use of funds. Whatever you do plan to apply for, make sure that the grant funds that you're requesting, the project you're requesting the grant funds for, tie back to the selection criteria that we've identified. So to the extent you're using a lot of funds for design and engineering work, that may not tie in with some of the criteria, for example, job creation and economic stimulus, or some of the long-term criteria, which is more focused on the construction of new projects. Some of these costs may not tie in as well, and to be competitive and to have your best chance to be awarded grant funds, make sure that the project and the costs that you intend to apply for line up, are well aligned with those criteria.
Good point. Jake, we would like to see every project be designed, right?
Yeah, projects.
We would like every project to have an engineer sort of,
yes,
having
that's
done
part
the design.
That's, yeah, that's part of the project readiness piece that was part of the presentation.
Okay, just wanted to be clear.
Yeah. And that goes to the next question, which is, are the projects submitted to be shovel ready? What minimum stage of design is acceptable, and what time frame are these projects expected to be released for bid? And again, if you look at the presentation, there is an entire element of project readiness that needs to be there. It includes the project schedule, the environmental approvals, legislative approvals, state and local planning, technical feasibility, financial feasibility, etc. All of that needs to be documented within the project proposal. And again, as I said, we expect the projects to be project's proposals to be complete upon submission to us.
Right, and the project readiness component of this ties back into the Economic Recovery Act as well, and the idea that we're looking to create jobs and economic activity quickly. The Economic Recovery Act has a express preference for quick start activities, and that's what this is getting at.
Are alternate delivery methods projects acceptable? The answer is yes. What type of freight rail transportation projects are eligible for funding under this program? And again, the language in the discretionary grant program is very broad and not constrained by reference to any particular programmatic eligibility. You should interpret rail transportation projects broadly. Several of the largest commercial railroad operators are interested in the design and demonstration of a plug-in hybrid locomotive to reduce fuel consumption, cost and environmental impact in their operating areas. Minimum funding to execute a 2 to 3 year pilot. Well, now we're getting into a project-specific question, so we're not going to answer that one because of the requirements of the federal lobbyist thing, so we're going to move on to the next. The individual who asked this question, if they are not a federally registered lobbyist, can go ahead and send it to us in writing, and we'll go ahead and answer it in writing. Is funding predicated on the project be completed by February 2012? The project doesn't have to be completed by then, but it's going to be given priority if it can be completed by then, is the way that I would answer that.
Yeah, and that also ties back into the Economic Recovery Act. The provisions of the Act, while they only gave limited guidance to the department in how to structure this program and what the selection criteria should be, the Act did specify a few priorities. One of the priorities is the Act said that while projects may be 100% funded with federal funds, there's a priority for projects that leverage other resources and use the federal funds to complete an overall financing package. And another priority spelled out by the Recovery Act is for projects that can be completed within 3 years. So as Tony said, it's not it doesn't eliminate from eligibility projects that can't be completed or aren't expected to be completed within 3 years, but the department will give priority to projects that can be completed within 3 years.
And in the course of Jake's answer, he answered the next one, which is, will these be 100% grants or will there be a match? The grants may be up to 100%, however, USDOT will prioritize a project that demonstrates strong collaboration and leverage federal dollars with non-federal funding. Who is financially responsible for potential cost overruns? The grantee is. Are there specific guidelines for applicants to use in estimating immediate job creation from the project in addition to the long-term job creation? Again, within the benefit cost, we realize this is an issue, and potentially in the supplemental guidance, we could have some information back out to people on this. Will the administration consider a program with projects across a geographic area that are logically tied, such as projects from several different short line operators, that while not individually more than $20 million combined to reach the $20 million threshold? The answer is, if the projects are to be evaluated as a group, and as a group they are used to meet the selection criteria, then collectively they do not need to meet the $20 million, and they don't meet the $20 million, then you'll need to ask for a waiver. To the extent that the projects are distinct, each will need to address all of the selection criteria separately, and each will need to either meet the $20 million threshold or request a waiver. If the applicant wants them considered separately, then they should each have independent utility. So if you have a collection of projects, and as a group, you are using them as a group to meet the selection criteria, then they stand or fall as a group. In multi-state applications, draft guidance indicates that a lead agency should be identified. Should each state on the application submit an application, or should it be a single combined joint application? A single application with a lead jurisdiction should cover the field.
But we are interested, of course, in knowing that all of the jurisdictions support the application.
Oh, absolutely, right. I think that would be part of the application process,
right.
is to demonstrate that all of the jurisdictions that you seek to represent are all on board and willing to go. Can multi-jurisdictional projects be formed and submitted? Obviously, the answer is yes. May the application be filed jointly between the state and local jurisdiction if the proposed project includes improvements consisting of a combination of a state highway and a local jurisdiction road? The answer is yes. Will letters of support from local jurisdictions be accepted with an application submittal? Yes, evidence of support from state and local officials, including relevant governors and mayors, will be evaluated in the system when the project will go forward. What you can do is, if that's going to be an appendix or an attachment, then you can reference the fact that you have broad jurisdictional support and political support, and you can attach the letters on the back end as attachment or appendices to the application itself.
One thing, because several of these questions really addressed having joint stakeholders, and I just remind you that one of the secondary selection criteria is partnership, where we will give priority to projects that demonstrate strong collaboration. So that may help inform some of these choices as you consider your options.
Yeah, and while we're on the topic of partnership, I think it's worth noting that we've sort of identified two areas of partnership that we're looking for. One is partnership in terms of the number of stakeholders who are involved, whether they're sort of federal, state, local, private sector, profit, not-for-profit, and whether they've provided financial involvement, whether they support the project in other ways. We've also identified involvement of community groups. But another area of partnership that we are thinking about is partnership in meeting sort of what we're calling a disciplinary integration. And that's to the extent there are sort of public service benefits or public service outcomes that multiple agencies, multiple public sector entities are working towards. To the extent you have projects that hit these goals that are being worked on by multiple agencies, for example, in the livability sector, to the extent you can have a project that combines transportation benefits and housing benefits, that's another aspect of what we're looking for under the broader framework of partnerships.
If the project is not in the MPO's current LRTP, but it will be in the long-range plan adopted in November 2009, will it be eligible? For those projects that need to be part of a long-range transportation plan, they need to be there before the grant funds will be awarded. Do projects submitted have to be listed on an approved current TIP? Again, before they are awarded, if the project needs to be listed on a TIP, then it needs to be there before the grant funds can be awarded.
Presumably these projects won't be on the TIP unless they get grant funds.
Right, to a certain extent, to the extent that what's missing from being on the plan is that they don't have the federal funds yet, we recognize that, and we give time from when projects are selected until the grants will be awarded to get that finalized. So we will, to the extent there's a reasonable likelihood that you'd be able to complete that within that period of time, that would be acceptable.
It's also worth noting that in the cases of some of the port and freight projects, they may not be required to be on some of the plans, and our recommendation is, if you don't know your MPO, work closely with them on this early to determine if it must be or if it might still be a good idea to include it in that for several reasons.
Could you clarify when and under what circumstances port and intermodal projects will need to be included in a TIP or a STIP? This is important for potential applicants to know, since it will take time to amend the TIP and the STIP if such action is necessary. Well, again, as Roger indicated, I think if the project is totally contained within a port, I'm not exactly sure whether it needs to be on a TIP or a STIP, but I would most assuredly encourage the port to talk to their MPO if that project is going to increase throughput or have impact upon the transportation network for the MPO. All regionally significant projects requiring an action by the Federal Highway Administration or FTA must be in metropolitan transportation plans, TIPs and STIPs. Further, in air quality, non-attainment, and maintenance areas, all regionally significant projects, regardless of the funding source, must be included in the conforming metropolitan transportation plan and TIP. So to the extent that you have to be contained in those things right up front, and if there's a regulatory requirement that you do so, then they're going to need to be included in those documents.
Right, so I guess as a general response, to the extent you're required to be in one of these plans, You will be required to be on the plan before you receive Tiger discretionary funds. To the extent you don't have already, you aren't previously required to be on one of these plans, the receipt of Tiger discretionary grant funds is not going to change that.
So where to now? We have been quantified from the chat box up here.
Yeah, so start with number 38 there.
Start with which is there an existing BCA model that exists?
Mm-hmm.
We did not, the question is there an existing BCA model that exists that addresses areas for Tiger grant funds?
Yeah, I think that's part of what we're looking for when we asked for comments on this requirement. And the Federal Register notice specifically asked for comments on the BCA requirements because you know, this is a unique program. The department doesn't have other programs that provide funding across multiple modes of transportation. We recognize that there's some new things in this program. Some of the criteria that we're using are not the most readily quantifiable and aren't the types of criteria that have been quantified in other existing department programs. For example, some of the livability measures. We recognize that there are challenges and we can't just plug this into an existing BCA model. You know, to the extent there were good ideas in the comments, to the extent we have additional guidance on this, encourage you to monitor the website and look for the supplemental Federal Register notice.
The 25-page narrative limit, is it single-spaced or double-spaced? It's single-spaced. And what is the font size? I don't know that we've defined the font
16.
Size.
16.
I don't know.
I don't think we've defined it, but I would say in terms of margins, font size, those types of things, be reasonable. Use your judgment. Some of the people who will be reading these applications may or may not have the eyes for font size that's too small. So be reasonable, I think, is the best answer we can give on that one.
Please find time to address workforce and community development partnerships. I'm not exactly sure what kind of a question that is. I would think the partnership piece of it is something that we've defined within the Federal Register notice, and I would direct you back to that piece of the Federal Register notice.
Yeah, that's
that talks about it.
Yeah, that's the section of partnerships has a item for jurisdictional and stakeholder collaboration. I'm not sure if this directly answers the question, but we do specifically state that the department will give priority to projects that make effective use of community-based organizations in connecting disadvantaged people with economic opportunities. But you know, to the extent you have non-traditional partnerships, things that go beyond sort of a combining state and local funding or state and federal funding, please go ahead and include that. We are interested in non-traditional partnerships.
Do you want copies of publicly available information or just where to find the information? If copies are required, is it correct to assume that this is not part of a 25-page narrative? Does included geospatial information also fall in the narrative category? I think as we've described in the Federal Register notice, if it is publicly available information and you want to make it available to us via our website or something along those lines within your application, that's perfectly acceptable to do so.
Yeah, just provide the link to the public. We, you know, there's some documents, maybe some environmental documents, might be hundreds of pages of long. We don't need you to attach the full thing. To the extent there's a website reference that can be provided, that's fine. In addition, to the extent you have information that's already been provided to another office in the Department of Transportation in connection with a different program, you should reference that information that was already provided. You don't need to duplicate the providing that information.
And does the geospatial information fall into the narrative category? I would say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. What is TIFIA? Well, since we have the TIFIA program manager with us.
Hope you don't need me to say. No, TIFIA is a federal credit assistance program. It is geared to projects of national and regional significance. It's been in existence for about a dozen years now. And we have funded over that time about 17 projects worth about $6 billion in total credit assistance. The standard TIFIA criteria are on our website. It's stated, I noted another question maybe coming up, we are requiring those who are looking to get a TIFIA loan to apply for TIFIA via the standard process. The great appeal of the TIGER solicitation is that it identifies some funding to pay for the cost of TIFIA loans, and that is a very welcome situation from our point of view because we have expended all of our current program funds. But if you were to Google TIFIA, I'm sure you would get right to the Federal Highway website, which has the project and program information.
My next question is, are ferries eligible? And vessel construction is eligible under the grant program, but only to the extent that they meet the criteria and compete successfully.
Under Title 49, Chapter 53 of U.S. Code, all public transportation projects are allowed, but the criteria seems to focus on capital investments. In your interpretation, can an applicant apply for alternatives, analysis, and or operations? Is this one we want to take back and review? I think we'll go ahead and take that one, a question for the record, as you will, and take that for advisement and come back to you with an answer for that. Can the grant funds be used for both planning, non-capital expenditures, as well as construction costs? What about engineering work? I think we covered most of this in the dialogue that we had regarding construction and administrative funds. Again, we expect a lot of the engineering feasibility and technical feasibility to be brought forward in the project proposal itself. But to the extent that these expenditures for these types of things are directly connected to the construction of the project, I would imagine that they are eligible and can be used in that. What constitutes a small city region to get a waiver? Do you have a threshold? Is there also a waiver for small counties?
Well, this goes back to the legislation as well. What the legislation says is that waivers will be eligible for significant projects in smaller cities, regions, or states. So that's the guidance that we have in the legislation. We didn't create in the Federal Register notice much more detailed guidance than what's included in the legislation. So I think that's the best sort of criteria to focus on is that language in the legislation.
The concepts of livability and sustainability are fairly broad. We'd be getting additional guidance on how these criteria will be applied.
Yeah, they definitely are broad, and there aren't sort of existing programs that have very focused definitions of these items. The Secretary has said that livability and sustainability are going to be priorities of the department. I think what we've done here is tried to give some illustrative examples of the types of metrics that we would be looking for. So if you look in the Federal Register notice, under sustainability, the focus is going to be on reducing fuel consumption, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and those are fairly quantifiable, so I would suggest those as a good place to start. In terms of livability, the Federal Register notice provides four measures with which the department will be looking for. One is the creation of more convenient transportation options. Another one is improvement of transportation choices by enhancing points of modal connectivity or by reducing congestion on existing assets. Another one is improving accessibility and transport services for economically disadvantaged populations, or making goods, commodities, and services more readily available to these groups. And the other one that was identified is whether or not the project is the result of a planning process which coordinated transportation and land use planning decisions. So I think we have identified some measures, so to speak, of what we would be looking for these items. However, we recognize that these are broad, and to the extent there are other measures which you think hit the criteria and make the project a good livability project or a good sustainability project, please do include those in the application. The Federal Register notice specifically says that these are illustrative measures, and we ask for people to include, if to the extent they feel they have relevant information which demonstrates their alignment with these criteria, they should, even if it wasn't specifically called out in the Federal Register notice, that information can be included and should be included in the application.
Can a jurisdiction submit multiple project applications?
Yes.
How does the Tiger money fit the quick start clause in ARRA? What work must have been done for a project to be considered shovel ready? As we described within the presentation itself, there are a number of project readiness criteria that have been identified in the Federal Register notice, and all of those are going to need to be adhered to in the project submission. For would-be applicants not accustomed to this program, potentially port authorities, how should they seek counsel on whether their project ideas are plausible or related to others' goals? Should they talk to their state transportation agencies if their project ideas are more regional than state-specific importance? Is it still important to solicit support from the pertinent state transportation agencies?
I'll take that one. I think, especially in the case of port and freight-related projects, and going back to the secondary criteria of partnership, would really encourage port authorities to be working with their metropolitan planning organizations, as well as the state DOTs and other stakeholders, to come to a consensus on the projects that will not only receive additional consideration as one of the criteria, but it will help it fit in as a local or regional system instead of a standalone piece.
Yeah, I guess I would add that all applicants are new applicants for this program, so nobody should feel disadvantaged in that sense. I would also note that the legislation doesn't specifically ask for state-level importance or what it basically says is projects that will have a significant impact on the nation, metropolitan area, or a region. So, you know, that's another one where you sort of use your judgment to the extent you feel you have certain types of benefits that are on the state level, local level, a national level. Think about who those relevant state and local officials would be.
TIFIA applications. To apply for both TIGER and TIFIA, there will be one TIGER application for grant funds and will reference a TIFIA amount requested. As the requesting agency, we will have one TIGER application and one TIFIA application. Is that correct? And the answer is yes, that is correct. We need to have applications for both programs. What is the deadline the funds must be used by? All the funds are available for obligation until 9/30/2011, right?
Exactly. Well, the funds are available until September 30th, 2011. However, that's to be obligated. The priority is for projects to be completed by the 3-year date from the date of enactment, which works out to February 17th, 2012. We have defined completion as the funds being expended. So we would give priority to projects that expect to expend all funds by 2/17/2012.
Has FDA issued guidance on how to perform greenhouse gas analysis? You'll have to go back to FDA and find that out for you. So that's another one we'll go ahead and handle later. Regarding a proposed project that might be eligible for categorical exemption under the NEPA process, what is the process to go through to get this exemption, and what is the time frame for how long it takes to get the exemption? I would think you have to go through the NEPA process. There are probably plenty of people at state DOTs and the MPOs that are familiar with the NEPA process that can walk you through what it is you need to do. I'm sure there is a website on the NEPA process that will give you ample guidance and information on exactly what it is you need to do to request these types of categorical exemptions and the time frames for walking them through.
It's probably worth noting that nothing in this act or this grant program changes the NEPA requirements. It's subject to it as anything would be.
Is there a deadline to obtain obligation? Like September 30th, 2011.
September 30th, 2011, and we also note in the application in the Federal Register notice that to the extent we decide to award funds to a project on a case-by-case basis, we're going to make determinations as to when it's reasonably likely that that project will be able to obligate funds, and that information should be included in the project schedule that we ask for as part of the application content. So. Each applicant will be providing a project schedule, which will have a determination as when they're reasonably likely to be able to get the funds obligated and to start expending funds. And we will be expecting projects to live up to those expectations after the funds are awarded. That'll be determined on a project by project basis based on the project schedules.
Okay. Can MPOs be a project applicant? As we said, the guidelines for who can apply are contained within the Federal Register notice. And they are governmental entities. I think that MPOs, except that they're a governmental entity, are included. I would assume that this funding will require local jurisdictions to follow all federal guidelines. For instance, on the Federal Aid Roadway Network, NEPA, PB&E, right-of-way acquisition following federal guidelines, etc. I think if it's a highway project, then I would imagine it's going to follow most of the guidelines, although this isn't federal aid money.
Yeah, there is a distinction here in the sense that a lot of requirements may come with Title 23 funds, may come with Title 49 funds. This money is not Title 23 or Title 49 funds. That doesn't mean there are no federal requirements that attached to this. I think NEPA is probably a good example where you have a federal action regardless of whether or not it's a Title 23. So there is a distinction there that's important to make. To the extent you have a highway project here that doesn't have any Title 23 funds in it, that's different than a highway project that does have Title 23 funds in it.
And it doesn't have to be on the federal aid system, is that correct?
That's correct. These projects do not have to be on the federal aid
So then what about the tip and stip and long range plan requirements? Those would also go with Title 23.
To the extent you don't hit the tip or stip requirements because you aren't requiring an FHWA or an FDA action, then you're not required to be on the tip or the stip for purposes of this program.
It goes beyond that.
I would imagine we're going to have more than one question on this. We'll probably have a number. Like I said, you know, on the website where we have Q's and A's, continue to hit that website and take a look. This is an issue that's come up on more than one occasion regarding the tips and the stips. And we will go ahead and get more thorough questions and answers through the department to get them on the website for you to take a look at. If at some stage of project design it is determined that a fatal flaw exists to project development or construction, can the sponsor terminate the project? What responsibility does the sponsor incur for project development costs? That's an interesting question.
Is the question whether or not the federal government incurs responsibility for the project
development
costs?
I'm just speculating that they have already incurred a number of costs in order to move the project forward, and then they hit this fatal flaw. What happens to the monies that they've expended? to date? And are they responsible for refunding that and giving it back, or how does that work out? And the answer is we don't have an answer for you right now. But we'll go ahead and put this one to the website and get back with you. Once projects are rated, what is the process for ranking? The projects are not going to be ranked. They are only going to be rated. And then we will select from projects, or the secretary will select from projects within the particular rating criteria and determine which ones will move forward. There are a number of different, as we said, programmatic functions that will have to take place after the projects have gone through the selection criteria that deal with geographic equity, rural and urban distribution, and of course no state may receive more than 20% of the funds allocated to the discretionary program. Can Tiger projects be segmented to expedite construction elements, that is, for a rail project that work on the footprint of the right-of-way move forward under Gattacol exclusion while engineering proceeds for stations or freight facilities that may be off the right-of-way and may be in need of environmental action?
I'll take a stab at that. I think the issues of independent utility would probably kick in there. Where if the right-of-way move can't be a standalone project, then there would probably be some concerns about trying to segment that.
There have to be logical terminal and independent utilities still.
Are local matching funds required? Will the funds filter through the State Department of Transportation? Again, this could be a 100% grant program, but as we said in the selection criteria, to the extent that you can leverage non-federal dollars to the maximum extent possible, that will be considered as we do project evaluation.
And in terms of whether or not the funds will filter through the State Department of Transportation, the legislation says that these funds can be provided directly to state or local government entities or transit agencies, so that's they do not need to go to the State Department of Transportation.
Do the priorities regarding livability and sustainability allow us to include the air quality benefits of rail transport and the project's environmental outcomes?
To the extent there are air quality benefits, reduced greenhouse gas emissions, that's certainly important to include in the sustainability and how well the project aligns with the sustainability criteria.
Which federal agency would administer a rail project that was within the boundary of a port? Good question. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I don't know the answer to that one straight away. We will probably bring whatever federal agency that has the most technical experience and background to bear on this, but I don't know that we've made a specific determination regarding which federal agency would administer that specific type of project.
Right. The notice actually says that'll be administered by the administration with the most experience or expertise, so I think that once projects are selected for, are identified for grants, then we'll look at each one and see. And certainly there's the possibility that there would be a lead and a support agency in the cases where, perhaps like this, where, it's not all one or another.
Review the environmental documents is a long and slow process. How will the influx of projects meeting review be addressed by the reviewers in light of the need for expedited schedule?
I think the answer is that we're looking for projects that are advanced in this process, and we're looking at projects that have sort of the final documentation in place. And we recognize that by creating this kind of expedited schedule, we're looking for projects that have received or are reasonably likely to receive their final NEPA documentation in short order, that there are a number of projects which are not going to be able to meet that threshold, but given sort of the preference for quick start activities in the Recovery Act, that's what we have here.
Can whatever admin funds are eligible be used as MPO funds match requirements? Well, there are no match requirements to start with. It's really to the extent that you can bring non-federal dollars to the equation. It's going to be considered part of the eligibility and selection criteria, actually the selection criteria.
And I guess whatever the proposal for using these funds is for, I mean, think about how well it's going to match up with the selection criteria.
One's project, we've already answered that one. The seaport and rail projects need to be included in the LRTPs of the relevant MPOs. Again, I think we've already answered that one in previous questions. Regarding the February 2012 deadline, is there any consideration that might be granted towards states who have a non-construction season due to weather? Again, the deadline, it's projects will be given priority that can be completed by that date. As Jake has already said in response to an earlier question, it's not a hard, fast requirement that the projects have to be completed by that time, but we do expect that we will give priority to those that can be completed by that time. Would appendix attachments for letters of support and other supplemental information count against a 25-page maximum? No, they will not. However, attachments and appendix information are only to be used to support statements contained within the actual application itself. Do not try to use the appendix or the attachment to expand the scope and extent of your application. There is some language stating that the DOT prefers fixed price contracts, but the Federal Register also indicates a priority is given to innovative contracting approaches that encourage accelerated project delivery. What is the effect of this on the use of construction manager at risk contracting methods?
Yeah, I think
go ahead if you want to try it. Well, otherwise, we can just take this one and handle it through the website and answer it later. Okay, that's the way we'll handle it. We have heard that there could be waivers for environmentals for an idea on Oberstar et al.
There will be waivers for environmentals. If the question here is whether or not there will be a set aside of $300 million towards 12 streetcar systems, if that's what the question is, there isn't, none of the money in this program is set aside for any particular types of projects or particular programs. So all of the applications have to be submitted by the application deadline will be reviewed concurrently. And the department hasn't predetermined in advance how much of the money will go to any particular type of project.
Will there be a standard application template? The answer is no, there will not. That one is a repeat of the question we've taken for the record. Some publications mention setting up a website for project with supplementary info link there. Is this recommended? Well, if you have supplemental information that you want to include as an appendix or an attachment to your project application, you need to give us the link for where we can find that. If you need to set up a website in order to be able to do that, then that's pretty much your determination as to whether or not you want to. But to the extent that we can get the data that is supporting information, either an attachment or an appendix from a website, that's up to you and how you want to provide that to us. How will you quantify the project's contribution to the economic competitiveness, both long-term and short-term?
Well, you know, I think this is one of those areas where we've tried to include some measures about what we think are ways of showing that that a project contributes to the overall economic competitiveness of the United States. I think one thing to note here is that we're not looking, this is distinct from the short-term economic jobs creation and stimulus criteria, so we're not looking for the long-term benefits section related to economic competitiveness to deal with that. But we have identified what we're looking for here in terms of we're looking for expansion, hiring, or other growth of private sector production, and we're looking for projects that improve the sort of long-term efficiency or reliability or cost competitiveness in the movement of workers or goods. I think one thing to note here is that we want to know that whatever measures are used in terms of cutting costs or reducing time are related to actual high-value economic activity. So, you know, we have said that we are open to applicants proposing other methods of demonstrating a project's contribution to the economic competitiveness of the United States, and we'll review those on a case-by-case basis. But make sure that they aren't just showing a measure, but that they're relating that measure back to actually expanding the economic competitiveness of the U.S.
How are you planning to address geographic distribution of funds? That will be a programmatic departmental function. We do have to ensure that we have geographic equity, and no one state can receive more than 20% of the total amount of funding for the program. But beyond that, I know that we've made hard and fast determinations on how we're going to do.
Yeah, and as Tony mentioned earlier, we're going to first be doing a competitive rating process, and the distributional requirements related to geographic equity and balancing urban and rural needs, to the extent our competitive rating process gives us an outcome that satisfies this, that's great. Otherwise, after the competitive rating process, we'll take these factors into account.
Can projects be completed with local forces like counties? Sure. Let's see if I'm right.
As opposed to a construction contract,
yeah,
that they're doing it with their
force accounts.
With
sure.
Their force accounts.
Right.
Yeah.
They can under transportation
enhancement
projects. Oh,
wow.
You need to check.
So can you use county workforce in order to do as opposed to hiring out a private sector contractor? Is that the question?
Yeah.
We should probably follow up.
We'll go ahead and follow up on that one. Right? We'll follow up. If grant funds sought for traditional highway project, will the applicant need to explain why this highway project was not funded as a priority for the stimulus funding distributed by FEMA? No?
No, I think it's more important to focus on what are the transportation challenges that this project is going to address, and how the project is going to address those challenges, and then align the project as well as you can with the criteria that are identified in the Federal Register notice.
There is the maintenance of effort requirement as well. How will program-specific criteria, if needed, be used to evaluate commuter rail projects that have not received a New Starts rating? We will get back to you with that and ask that of FDA. Because that really is their programmatic piece. Unfortunately, we don't have an FDA representative with us today on the group here. So the small criteria is not referring to federally determined rural classification.
That's correct. I think if the question is whether or not the waiver for smaller projects is aligned with the need to balance urban and rural needs, then the answer is correct. They are separate. The smaller projects that the waiver is available for are significant projects in smaller cities, regions, or states. So it isn't necessarily aligned with the clarification between urban and rural areas.
Can you apply for funds for a pre-construction and construction phase together in an ITS project? Are you developing a design criteria package and also a design build contractor for an incident management system? The phases could be completed within 3 years of award and announcement. To the extent that you can meet all of the selection criteria for project readiness, I think that would be the driving force there. If you're still putting together the design package, then maybe it's not at a readiness point where it needs to be in order to get funding for this program. How would project-specific criteria, if needed, be applied to multimodal projects? I would say that's the challenge of the applicant.
I think the program-specific criteria are really designed for...
I say project-specific.
Oh, I the project specific, I see. Well, there's, I think to the extent there are program specific criteria, They are limited to the projects that fit within that program. So they send you a multimodal program projects that don't fit within any of the program specific criteria, then the program specific criteria won't be applied to those projects.
Yeah, the program specific criteria is just for those project types that fall under a specific program element.
And
then we would use the program elemental criteria to kind of differentiate amongst those projects. If they're all bridge projects, for example, we'd use some of the bridge criteria to do that. If it's multimodal and it doesn't fall under one of those, then it's not applicable and you don't have to worry about it. Does the amount applied for in the TIFIA alone count as part of the total $300 million cap?
Yeah, the answer there is that the TIFIA application is for the TIFIA subsidy costs, and those TIFIA subsidy costs are what will be included in determining how a state fits under the $300 million cap. The total amount of the TIFIA credit assistance is not the relevant number for determining how a project fits into the state cap.
If there are leftover funds, how will those be distributed? Is it possible for a state to receive more than $300 million maximum?
Well, I guess one part of this question is, if we go through the solicitation process and we don't receive enough sort of qualified projects and we want to go out with another solicitation, we have reserved the right to go out with another solicitation. At the same time, if there are leftover funds, meaning for some reason there's unused funds after they've been, all the projects have been selected and some of the, and so for whatever reason the project doesn't end up using the funds, I think there'll be a determination at the time about the best way to go about using those funds. It is important to the department that the funds do get used and that they don't languish as unused funds, but I think we'll have to make a determination based on how much money is available before we would decide the best way to go about using those funds.
Next one is, can a state DOT apply on behalf of several small projects in several ports? And the answer would be yes, you could.
How would a request for a large project, over $250 million for example, be handled provided the project is highly rated, particularly in regards to the U.S. DOT needs to equitably distribute funds geographically? Would an otherwise highly rated project be dismissed just because it is too large of a request, or would a grant be provided in the amount less than that requested? I would think we would handle it straight up. Obviously thinking that no state can get more than $300 million, and there is a $300 million cap on the number of on the amount that the projects can have, there's nothing that says that one project for $300 million couldn't be awarded to an individual state. Again, keep in mind we have urban and rural issues, but there's nothing that says I wouldn't say that we would necessarily exclude a project if it's highly rated simply because it happens to be a very large project in one state. Is there any tie between Tiger Grant programs and the RIF loan program? Would applying for a loan through this program benefit our grant request? I would think not.
No specific tie.
There is no specific tie between Tiger Grants and the RIF program. Does Davis-Bacon apply?
Federal wage rate requirements do apply. And that's a provision that's in the Economic Recovery Act, specifically stating that they apply to these funds.
Does DBE apply? I'd have to go back to
it. We'll
table that and get back to it. And what are the bid requirements? We'll get back to that one as well. Can supplemental supportive documents be submitted after the application? I.e., will supportive documentation be accepted if submitted within reasonable time frame after the application deadline if they were not available at the time of submission?
I think we expect applications to be complete when submitted. One exception which we've noted in here is that if environmental documentation is reasonably likely to be received within a reasonable time frame, the application should note that, and that will be considered by the department. But otherwise, we expect applications to be complete when submitted.
When funds are granted to a local agency, will the state be required to provide the 1511 certification for the project?
And I believe 1511 certifications are ones where the statute says that the governor, mayor, or other chief executive, as appropriate, must certify as to the project receiving full review and vetting, and responsibility for it being an appropriate use of taxpayer funds. So the certification does have to be provided, and I think the guidance that the department has provided on who provides that application is the same for this program as it is for others.
If funds are granted to a local agency, we already did that, okay. Will design build be an acceptable method for project delivery to reach substantial completion within the 2/17/2012 deadline?
Yes.
Yes. Will projects that leverage other federal funds already in hand, prior earmarks, be given equal consideration as those that offer non-federal funds? Interesting question. It will be, I don't know about equal consideration, it will be considered.
Yeah, it will be considered, but I think the focus here is on leveraging non-federal,
right.
Non-federal resources.
Right. Projects far along in the NEPA process. A local off-system could have been in planning process and be shovel-ready pending funding. No environmental documents required. Is this local project, if this local project is funded, would it not then require environmental clearance, which would be starting that process from scratch? Does this not eliminate off-system projects?
Not necessarily.
Well, why don't we get back
follow
to this
up,
one?
Yeah.
We'll follow up on this one. I know somebody asked this question earlier, but I missed the answer. Will this funding require local jurisdictions to allow federal guidelines? To the extent that they meet federal aid requirements, the answer is yes. Again, all of these will be posted to the website for OST, and you can go back in and take a look at all the questions and answers when they come up. If it were possible to change order a TIFIA grant project info into larger mega project that meets all of the project schedule requirements, would the reporting requirements of the grant project extend to or be applicable to the entire mega project? We'll get back to you on that one. Don't have an answer for you straight away. EPA New England, is DOT seeking a balance between freight and passenger-focused projects?
The department hasn't set aside any particular amounts of money for freight or passenger, and the department is expecting to get both. We'll evaluate them concurrently, but hasn't predetermined that it will meet any particular balance between freight and passenger-focused projects.
I think it's important to mention that in questions like that, it's the degree to which in a project, regardless of whether it's freight or passenger, meets the criteria is going to be the primary consideration, after which is the geographic, rural, urban mix, and all of that. So it's the merits of the application.
If a project is already listed in the MPO's TIP, but in outer year due to funding availability, would the project be eligible for TIGRA funds for advanced construction much earlier? Yes. How is smaller cities, regions, and states defined? Is there a population threshold?
No. There's no definition provided for that in the Federal Register of Ordinances.
What formatting limitations, requirements will be imposed upon the 25-page application, i.e. double-sided pages versus single-sided? Either way, you'd answer this. Single page. We didn't decide on the font size, we didn't decide on the margins, other than we simply asked you to be reasonable about it and not make it microfiche. Can funds be used for railroad line acquisition and rehabilitation? Again, the idea of job creation, economic stimulus.
Yeah, I think in terms of acquisition of railroad line, acquisition of right-of-way, it's again a situation where you know, the funds could be used for that, but you have to see how that's going to meet up with the eligibility criteria. So I think you would need to have some kind of construction project that it's related to, and you would still need to tie all the use of the grant funds back to the criteria.
And I think again, that one's a little tricky to answer based on that. If it's a rail line that you're acquiring that's not currently in service, it could be very different. So again, I'd call your attention to those criteria and see if that act is really creating the jobs or not.
Right. If it's really necessary for purposes of the overall construction project, or if it's something beyond the scope of that project.
All right. Would the speakers identify themselves? This is Tony Frost from the Federal Highway Administration.
Jake Falk from the Office of the Secretary.
And Roger Bonnet from the Maritime Administration.
All right. Please clarify in your follow-up how Davis-Bacon and DBE apply when the project is to be conducted by a freight railroad company. Okay, we'll do so. Is that it? We have exhausted the typed in questions?
Well, I think there may be
some kind of a record for talking freight.
There may be a few more that are currently typing in right now, but we'll give them a chance to come through. Jerry, if the operator can come on the line and allow people, if they have a couple of questions, we just have a couple more minutes here. If you have a couple of questions over the phone, if you'd like to ask a question, Jerry, if you can please tell us how to do that.
Certainly. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. To withdraw your question, press star 2. One moment.
While that's taking place, we have one more that said the Q&As will be posted on the website. Is it possible to send an email with a link or specific location? It is the one that was included in the last slide of the presentation we gave, and that will be posted to the Talking Freight website by the 19th of June.
Yeah, I will send an email out to all registered participants. So if you did not register for today's seminar, please include your email in the chat box for me so I have it, and you will get a notification of when those materials are up on the website.
And that was Abby Swain. One moment. And our next question comes from Diana. Diana, you may ask your question.
Jerry, I'm sorry, but we're not actually hearing any question coming through the line. I apologize if I'm cutting someone off.
That one, I believe they just muted their line. Diana, if you would unmute your line.
We didn't hear Abby's either.
Okay, one moment. Abby, if you want to go ahead and queue back up.
So I have a 2005 Ford Chevrolet. And lately it's been...
Okay, we have Rocco.
Hello, I just want to confirm that toll agencies are eligible to accept the federal funding.
To the extent the toll agency is a political subdivision of state or local government, then it would be eligible to receive funding.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Okay, if anyone would like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment.
There is one question really quickly here. Can funds be used for railroad line acquisition and rehabilitation?
Yeah, I think we
did you answer that one already?
Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure.
Sure.
And then, can you recommend any guidance that would address your expectations of the content of the cost-benefit analysis?
I think that was answered earlier. We recognize that Federal Register notice asked for comments about what should be included in there, and the department, to the extent we are providing additional guidance, it'll be posted with Supplemental Federal Register notice by June 17th. So monitor the website, and by June 17th there should be, to the extent we're issuing additional guidance, that's where you'll see it.
And at this time, we have no further questions on the audio.
Okay, thank you. Just to let you guys know, the next Talking Freight seminar will be held on June 17 and will be about climate change. The slide that is currently loading on your screen is going to also list the upcoming Talking Freight topics through October 2009, so I encourage you to sign up and attend those seminars as well. We will be closing out for today. Thank you so much for all of your questions and your participation, and we look forward to seeing you at the next Talking Freight.